Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. My name's Alex and I'm your host today. I'm really excited for today's episode. I'm chatting to Amy Gomes, Serge Gomes, Gary Berkowitz, and Colin Allen, all working within Queensland. Now, they're the team of PEA, which is Paramedic Education Australia, which is formerly known as Team Australia EMS. Now, they're going to discuss this new venture, including their incredible international tours for students and paramedics, Ferno Sim, student CPD and conferences. But then we're also going to get into a really important topic of student attitude. So thank you guys for joining me today. I'm incredibly excited to chat to you all, and I'd love to get you guys to introduce yourselves and this transition to PEA.
Hi, everyone. I'm Amy. I've got here with me Serge, my husband, in case you didn't pick up on the similar last name.
Hi, everyone. I'm Serge. I'm a critical care paramedic from the Ipswich area.
Hey, Alex. Thanks for getting my name pronunciation right. That's unusual. Wasn't prepared for that. So my name is Gary, and I work on the high acuity response unit in the Gold Coast. And again, Alex, thanks for having us on today.
Thank you for coming. And Colin?
Yeah, hi everyone. I'm Colin Allen. I'm a state SOZ based at Kedron and look after the operations centres and operations delivery across the state. And once again, thanks for having us.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining. What was your move from Team Australia EMS to the transition to PEA? If you guys would like to go into a bit about that.
Our main move away from Team Australia EMS basically came from the fact that we're no longer competing internationally in paramedic competitions. So Colin, who's on our team, he competed in the GEMS Games in 2004, I believe it was the first ever GEMS Games, and won gold for Australia there. So after that, we just sort of continued to have an Australian team, which is where Team Australia EMS came from. But we no longer do those competitions as much. We took a different focus about 5 to 6 years ago to target more on educating predominantly students and doing some more mentoring. So that's when our international tours began in 2015. We initially went to South Africa for our first tour with students. And so since then, we've just been maintaining that sort of a focus. And we decided that Team Australia EMS didn't really, the title didn't really display what we do. It doesn't really give a good indication of what we're about anymore. So we just decided it needed a bit of a revamp and a different direction, I guess.
That's really interesting. And so are you guys going to be continuing those international tours for students and all of that?
Yeah, definitely. So every year we have a couple hundred people apply for our tours, and we usually only take about 16 to 20 to South Africa. We take a few more to America, which I'll let Colin talk about. We started the American one, I think, in 2016, and it's equally successful, and we had to actually make two tours for that. But we have a lot of interest, and we have a really good time, and we provide 24/7 support to the students there. So there's actually always at least two team members from PEA with the students, especially the areas that we go to. So the work is quite interesting, but it also comes with some risk and a degree of safety that we need to be aware of. So there's always one of us with the students, and we organise rostering with different services, and we do interesting things like helicopter underwater escape training, which is actually internationally recognised through one of the universities. So that can be used here in Australia as well. And it's just a really good opportunity to get to know some other students from different places across Australia and also meet some extremely experienced paramedics around the world. And a lot of our students have kept those contacts. We always joke about a big reunion tour, which we might do one year, which I think would just be a massive good catch-up session for everyone. But Colin is really the master of the American side of it, and they do a few other unique things. So I might let Colin speak more on the American tour department.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks, Amy. And just so everyone's aware, Al's managed to join in, so he's on the phone now as well. So we took our first tour to the US in 2016, and then we continued for the following couple of years after that. And unfortunately, with the pandemic at the moment, it stopped us this year. But with the vaccinations rolling out and all that other good stuff happening, hopefully we'll get them back up and running probably in 2022, all being well, fingers crossed. It's like Amy said, they're an educational tour. They're based on professional development. We place the students with paramedics in predominantly a fire and EMS setting because that's what it is in America. And it gives the students a really good understanding of why, A, it costs so much to run an emergency medical service in America, because every time you go somewhere, you get an ambulance and a big red fire truck. And it also exposes the students to the different levels of training. So EMT, EMT basic, intermediate, right through to paramedics. And they ride on an ALS truck. Some of the other things we do in America is we take them to certain locations. Like one in San Diego, we take them to Strategic Operations, which is an organisation that trains combat medics for Navy SEALs, the US Army Rangers, et cetera, as well as normal paramedics and also special operations paramedics. So they get to spend some time there. And then we take them to places and they get to meet people like AJ Heitman and all that from the GEMS and EMS Today. So we cram a lot into 2 weeks. And they get to do some fun stuff as well. We take them to places like Disneyland and Knott's Berry Farm and out to the Grand Canyon. We take them on fireboats around Long Beach, around the port of LA. So they get to see a nice wide variety of different aspects. Some of them, places they work, are really, really, as Amy said, can be quite dangerous. Very low socioeconomic areas like Skid Row in Los Angeles, which is world renowned for potentially the busiest EMS station in the world. But all in all, it's based on education and professional development for students.
That's really interesting. It sounds like a lot of fun as well as, you know, really great value for learning. Now, I'd like to firstly thank you, Alan, for joining, and I'd like to get you to quickly introduce yourself as well, if that's okay, and then we'll move on to our topic of attitude.
So my name's Alan. I am a senior ops supervisor within the Queensland Ambulance Service, currently working as the acting director of workforce management. And I, with the team, just look after most of the travel bookings when I get them right.
I think it's important to highlight, Alex, that Alan has actually booked us a hotel in the wrong country once when we he also booked us a hire car for the wrong month. But
honest mistakes.
We don't dwell on these things.
No, we won't talk about that.
Both occasions ended in laughter, thankfully. But yeah, Alan's our logistics manager and doesn't always manage logistics well.
One job, Al. One job.
One job. Yeah, that's me. So yeah, that's me. I've been in ambulance for over 30 years. That's a long time in different countries. And yeah.
That's really cool. And so I guess we'll kick it off now into attitude. You guys obviously have a wealth of experience and knowledge. So it's probably not, as you said, you have students going on all these tours all the time. And, you know, you've probably been mentoring students for a long time as well. So I wanted to get your perspectives on attitude. And in particular, starting out, what qualities or characteristics of students that you've come across have made the greatest impression?
I think number one is just be a nice human being. I think that kind of, that's a starting off point. And be aware that what we do, and I have no doubt various employers within ambulance services in Australia do as well, is the first thing we do when we have an application is go to your social media profiles and a lot of our thumbs up, thumbs down moments as discussed on who we take on our tours. As Amy said, we get hundreds of applicants for 20 positions for these overseas tours. It's based on reputation. So if we have a recommendation from a previous student who vouches for a next future student for a tour, that probably holds the most weight. And then second to that would be a look at your social media. So your social media account really matters. And beyond that, I would just say an ability to make a good first impression, because that's really the only time you get to do something once. And be on time, if not early, and have a willingness to learn and be keen, but not too keen as well. Don't be too needy.
I think I have a similar, very much similar stance to what Gary has said. I've been doing a lot of OIC roles and also being a critical care paramedic at Kedron as well. I have quite a lot of interactions with students on placements and things like that. And I'm always just thoroughly impressed, like Gary said, with the people that are just nice. I genuinely don't mind where people are up to clinically. That's stuff we can teach people and people can learn, but you can never teach people compassion or how to just be nice, and it shows. And if someone is a very selfish person who clearly has no ability to, you know, help to check the truck in the morning, they show up 5 minutes late and the crew's already gone or things like that. I don't mean you need to make your crew's cookies and things like that. Don't go too extreme, although Alan probably wants that sort of thing. But you just need to show up well presented, and early is nice if you can get there, you know, 10, 15 minutes early. Contact the OIC beforehand, you know, make those sort of little contacts is good. We have a melting pot of students overseas. A lot of them don't know each other when we go over. It's a very foreign environment. They're jet lagged. We're now putting them into some situations where they'll see more high acuity work in those 2 weeks than they will in 2 years of their career. So it is a very stressful time, and it does bring out some interesting personalities when we're overseas. But one thing that we realised is that it's actually an opportunity for us to give feedback to some of these students that they may never actually get in their day-to-day uni life. So one example I think that I always think of and reflect on, we had one student who, for whatever reason, started questioning a critical care paramedic equivalent over in South Africa about their pain relief dosage. And in South Africa, trauma is a high workload. That's their bread and butter, essentially. So to ask a critical care paramedic if they're happy with their pain management protocol when the patient was comfortable and not complaining of any pain is a bit rude and inappropriate. So we sat down with this student later and just said, you know, I'm not sure if you realise, but you come across like you know a lot and you're questioning a 20-year CCP experience, and it just doesn't look good, and everyone around you didn't think it was very professional, and that can impact your career. And this student paramedic genuinely, and I believe that they genuinely didn't realise that they came across like that, and they were just absolutely devastated. They thought they were asking it more in a way like, tell me why we didn't give more pain relief. However, it came across more of a, why didn't you do that? So one thing also, I think, if someone tells you they think your attitude is not appropriate, try not to get upset and defensive. Take that as a moment that someone has taken the time to tell you, and this is a chance you can actually change. And finding that out early on in your career is better than, you know, that I think we can all vouch for people who are 15, 20 years in their career now and no one ever had that conversation with them, and they're just incapable of not having a bad attitude at work. So I think also know how to take the feedback when you are pulled up on your attitude and turn it into a positive situation is probably my biggest thing, because I do take a lot of effort now to give people feedback, even if it isn't so positive, and make sure that they understand that this is a chance to change and to move forward and do something better from there.
Absolutely. That's really good. That continues to be a or reflection and taking feedback on has been continuously something that MICA flight paramedics have told us and CCPs across this podcast. So that seems to be a recurring theme.
Yeah, I think there's some, I think throughout your whole career, even when I was doing the critical care paramedic program, it taught me how to take feedback better. Arguing with people, you know, everyone always gets defensive when they're told they don't do something well. But when you have a moment to reflect on it later, there's sometimes quite a lot of truth in what people are saying. And as I said, if someone's taken the time to give you feedback, they could easily just walk away and say nothing. And that's a problem when students just flow through their uni years not actually getting accurate feedback and they don't know where they can develop. So if you have got that, even if you don't always agree with it, it's still something you can learn from.
Totally support what Amy and Gary have said. I've been in this job for 35 years now, so I wear the badge of being a crusty old dinosaur. But attitude, I personally believe that the attitude is in some instances is more important than your clinical training and your clinical abilities. You can be taught clinically to do what you need to do, but the attitude is something that you're brought up with. It's something that you bring to your role as a paramedic. It's something that you bring to the profession. One of my mentors many, many years ago told me that feedback is not to be looked at like it's criticism or it's praise or whatever. It's more of an educational opportunity. So you take that feedback, whether it's good, bad, indifferent, and then you use that to educate yourself, self-motivate yourself, and just try to make yourself a better person. I suppose being around for as long as I've been around in the service is that you can be the world's worst clinician, but you can treat people with empathy and you can do things nice. And then you've got the flip side, you know, where you are the world's best clinician, but you don't have the empathy and that goes with it. And we are in a very unique position. We're probably the only profession or one of only a handful of professions where people, you go into people's homes and into people's lives at the worst possible time in their life. And no matter what you do, the one thing they'll remember is how you treated them, the empathy that you brought in when you walked through the door. And basically that you not only looked after their clinical issues, you looked after their own well-being and the well-being of their family and loved ones that happened to be there at the time. With the overseas part, when we take students overseas, as Amy said, what we try to instill into them is that you are technically a representative of all students in Australia. So we can't take everyone because unfortunately we don't have that many spots. We'd love to, but we can't. So the people that come across, we try to take people that have a really good positive attitude and an attitude that they'll be able to display to other services around the world so they know, hey, hang on a minute, these people that come from Australia, they are really, really good clinicians, but they've got the empathy and the understanding that goes with it. So, yeah, I guess that's pretty much it.
That's really wonderful. I really like that perspective of taking it as an educational opportunity rather than taking it personally. Alan, do you have an answer for that one as well?
You know, when you arrive, the way you look and act reflects directly on you and the university that you're from. You know, patients, and when you're dealing with patients, they look at you in a uniform. They don't differentiate you as a student. They look at you as being part of the service that's there, whichever service you're working for. So, you know, the way you behave and the way you interact with that patient or the crew on a scene, if it's not good, it's going to bring that whole service to disrepute with that patient. You need to also, when you're at the station, be involved with the crew. You know, if they're doing something, go and help them. Don't just sit watching the TV, one of the lazy boys, while they're out cleaning the car or checking. Get involved. Rock up neat, rock up tidy, ready to work. Don't go out the night before drinking. And then rock up there with a hangover. Just doesn't look good. Ask questions, understand what they're telling you. And if you don't ask again, learn, demonstrate, and apply. Those are the, so yeah, ask, understand, learn, demonstrate, and apply. That'll make a good impression. Don't just sit there with a mouthful of teeth and ask no questions.
I really like that one as well. That one also seems to be a recurring theme, is the continuously asked questions. Now, Serge, do you have a perspective on the types of qualities and characteristics of students that make the best impressions?
I think what everyone, from what the rest of the team has said, sort of hits the nail exactly on the head, and I couldn't agree with them anymore. One thing I'd like to highlight for students to aspire to is find a good, I love the word that Cole uses, is a empathetic paramedic. Find a good professional empathetic paramedic and try and model your behavior on their behavior. Remember, the feedback that we give comes from a professional aspect where we want a student to grow. Good mentors will never berate students. We're not there to break the student down and to completely sort of shatter what they did. We were all students. We've all made mistakes before. So we want to build those students up as best as possible. And we want to mold them into the best possible paramedic that they could ever be. So when we give feedback, we'll always try to do it in a positive, professional way. And we want that student to immediately be receptive to that feedback. We don't want them to shut off completely. So what the feedback that we give, or that 90% of the paramedics give, comes from the heart. We honestly want to make a difference in their student career. We don't want them to shut off. Just the small things that that the rest of the team has said, get involved, like Al said, get involved, be proactive, see where you can help, even if it's learning how to put on a bandage, if it's learning how to put the scoop stretcher together or the combi carrier. It's those small little things that are going to further you down in your career.
Absolutely. Really like those ones. Back in last week's episode, which was episode 15, I spoke to Dr. Jo Stevens, and she mentioned something that changed my attitude and perspective towards patients who call for something that we wouldn't consider an emergency. But her response to this was to be curious. And she said that we know it isn't normal for someone to call for a paper cut, for example, but it's important to ask why they called. There could be something much more going on, something underlying like DV or anything like that. So what are your thoughts when students or other paramedics say that they went to, for example, a rubbish of a case?
Well, I'll start. I don't think any case is rubbish. You know, it's whatever that emergency is, it's that person's emergency. We're not there to judge why. You're there to go out. And as the doctor said, go and have a look, be curious. See what it's about. Look at the surroundings. Look at what you're walking into. Be observant. See, and you will pick up in some instances that, yeah, these people actually have called for help for something other than what they've said that they need the ambulance for. Or even if it is trivial that you're there for a stubbed toe. To them, that's an emergency. You just talk to them, deal with them as you would your friend or your parent or your brother or your sister. There's no need to be rude. There's no need to berate them.
Yeah, I actually think that these are fantastic opportunities for us to hone our physical assessments. You're only going to be able to pick up abnormal once you know what normal is. So as a paramedic at any level, if you're assessing normal chests, if you're feeling well-perfused cap refill, good, strong radial pulses, you are going to be really good at picking up abnormal. Just think of a GP who every day sees 20 to 30 patients in their practice and they listen to chests, how honed their technical skills are. So beyond the empathetic response and being curious, you've got a real opportunity to understand what normal is. And I promise you, if you listen to 100 chests, you're going to pick up a subtle wheeze that someone who only listens to 5 chests might miss. So look for the opportunities that these cases present, not only from an understanding of a patient needs response, but also enhancing your clinical performance as well.
Yeah, look, just following on from what Gary and Alan said, and particularly what Al said, when you go to a job and, you know, you might come across the same patient that you go to 4 or 5 times in a block of shifts. People look at the ambulance service and in particular the paramedic for more than just come there, treat my paper cut or whatever. You don't get to be the most trusted profession in the world for how many years it is now without having the ability to go in, help people, not be dismissive of people, particularly, you know, you might go to, like you said, someone that it's truly a domestic violence type situation, but they don't know how to seek help. So they come to the ambulance service and because they know that we'll listen, they know that we will help. But yeah, and when you look at it, you look at all the movies and all the fancy shows on TV, and paramedics are going to plane crashes every day and train wrecks and all that type of stuff. But in reality, that's a very small part of our job. And people reach out to us when they need help, and it might be a paper cut, but to them, it's their emergency. It's personal, and they're the ones that need help. And like Gary said, the more you go to these type of jobs, you hone your skills. So then when you do get the big one, you've got a better understanding.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And that's something that we spoke to the Free Radicals about in their episode, and how important those cases are they give you the opportunity, as you said, to hone your skills. And I think it ties back in nicely to all of your answers in the first question, that it's an opportunity still to be that empathetic paramedic. That's really important.
I think one thing I've learned, I've been with the QAS qualified for over 10 years now, and it's like Al and Cole can attest to sort of lasting the distance, I guess. There's many reasons why. Some are very much out of people's control. But one thing I do genuinely believe is that we can, to a degree, contribute to our own satisfaction at work. And I find that there's some people who may potentially contribute a bit more to how much they dislike their job by just seeing everything as a negative case. And it's exactly what everyone else has said in the team. There's many reasons why people call for things that we might see as lower acuity. We don't know that maybe their whole life they were brought up thinking that their family may have called for those things. They may genuinely believe that it is an emergency, like we hope they do. But there may be a social aspect as well. They may not have money to go and see a GP. They may not have a car. There's lots of reasons why. And we're not just there clinically. We need to remember there is a big social aspect to our job as well. And we need to support people in society, because that's how we have a stronger society as a whole, is when we support people who need us. I think as a paramedic individually, though, if you see every 2C as a rubbish job, you will miss those big cases. So I recall going to a chest pain case where, when we arrived, the patient was shutting his front gate and locking up. And the paramedic I was working with at the time, who was one of those people that just saw that everything was just rubbish and low acuity and always downplayed every job, I remember she said to me, she's like, wow, this is a load of crap. He's clearly not that sick if he can lock his front gate. And fast forward 5 minutes later, and we discover this gentleman was having a massive inferior STEMI and was very unwell. So we just need to walk in there with an open mind. If you prejudge a case, you already give yourself a bias down a pathway, and that's dangerous. So some of the sickest patients I've ever been to have been 2Cs. So I just, my thoughts also is just to make sure that you take every job individually. And if you spend your whole day thinking about how it's rubbish and it's a waste of time and things like that, you also bring your own personality down, I guess. And it's draining. It is so hard being negative all the time. And I think we have the best job in the world. So if we can try and focus on, maybe we assisted that patient with discovering that there's actually a local GP that could help them. Or maybe we assisted them to go to hospital and get some more social support through a highly qualified social worker that we couldn't provide on scene. There is so many more things that we can do than just show up and be rude. More than, I think it's like more than 70% of our complaints within the ambulance service are attitude related. So it's very easy to go in and be rude and get a career limiting complaint based on your attitude. But why don't people just be nice? That's all that's my opinion of it all.
I was going to say, if you have a look at the services that you're working for, or that around the code twos that we're taking to hospital compared to the code ones, how many of them are actually admitted? You know, most of the people you're taking to recess are out of there within 2 hours and on their way home. It's those that are going in that we're taking in code two and three. They're the sick ones. They're the ones that get admitted. They're the ones. That's why you have a look at the ramping issues we have. It's because they're waiting for beds for code twos and threes up in the wards because they're being admitted for care. Just have a look at that, and then people need to remember that they don't realize how sick they are sometimes when they actually phone in.
Absolutely, that's a really good perspective, actually. Good way to put ramping. I didn't think of it like that.
It is, and also you have a look at the services employ paramedics to sit in their comms rooms to call these people back that are to double check. You know, they're not calling the code ones and twos back. They're calling the threes. Oh, they're calling the twos and threes back. They're not calling the code ones back, because they've got to continuously check that nothing is changing and just double check what information they've given to the EMDs. You know, because people are sick. They just don't realize how sick they are. And if we rubbish them before we get there, we arrive with a preconceived idea and we're going to miss something.
Absolutely. And Serge?
Oh, no, I just agree with everyone there. I think the only thing I can sort of add to it is don't be that paramedic. Don't be that person with that sour attitude and that already preconceived bias. Treat others as you want others to treat you. Do unto others as you want done unto yourself. Be that type of person. There's a handful of times, like specifically, I can name a good couple of people in my lesson that are the most absolutely incredible communicators and incredible practitioners that arrive on scene and I'm like, wow, that's how it should be done. So be those paramedics.
Absolutely. And going into our last question and moving in towards, I guess, that those negative people. So it can be incredibly difficult to maintain a positive attitude when surrounded by such negative people. How can students avoid becoming jaded or negatively impacted by mentors who do appear to be really negative and jaded?
We have to put up with Alan all the time so we can speak from firsthand. I'm just joking. We love Alan and he's lovely. I think one of the biggest struggles students, I think, would have on pracs is having qualifieds that aren't interested in teaching. And while Serge said that, you know, 90% of people who provide feedback it's coming from a good place. We, a lot of the time on our tours, because we're with these people for 2 weeks straight, these students, so we get to really have some quite deep conversations with people and find out a lot about them and their previous pracs and experiences and things like that. And it's sad when we hear that there have been negative experiences. That's a given, though. We can't forever guarantee that they're always going to have a good time. But I genuinely think, and it's very cliched, and I'm sure it's been said before, but you can learn from those people how you will never treat someone. And I'm not ashamed to call people out about treating paramedic students poorly. Now, and I think it's probably a little bit easier as a CCP, although ACPs are definitely doing it as well. But I think it's easier to tell someone that they're being unprofessional to a student when I've been in the job a little bit longer than a year, sort of thing. So these days I just have zero tolerance. I've called people out for yelling, "Hey, student," on a job, and they've had that student for 2 weeks. Like, come on, mate, use their name. They're people. And some of these people seem to forget what it was like to be a student. It's like they never had to do a studentship before. On the flip side, one thing Andy Bell has recently spoken about is that it is very exhausting to be a qualified and mentoring and putting a lot of effort in. It is, it takes up a lot of your cognitive load. You're also trying to manage critical patients and things like that. So it is exhausting and tiring to be a good mentor. But I'm just always still saddened to hear that there are nasty qualifieds out there to students. So I think my biggest advice is to use it as a learning curve. Realise that that's how you never want to be, and don't give up and think that that's how everyone is. If you've caught that bad seed, try and recognise that that is not what the career is all about. Because sadly, I've heard of students who've not pursued the career any further because they've had a really negative experience on prac, and that's devastating. There's many reasons why this job's difficult, but, you know, lack of support from a mentor shouldn't be a reason people don't continue. So we're also more than happy if students ever want to reach out for feedback on how something went. We have a lot of debriefing with students over situations. Obviously, we're not there. We can't give a first-hand opinion, but we've had enough interactions with students on the tours and hearing their stories that we do appreciate that sometimes there is people out there that maybe should consider a different career pathway, to be honest.
Absolutely. That's really interesting. And I was at the talk with Andy Bell, and that was quite an interesting thing to hear as a student, in terms of, you know, as a mentor, it can be, you know, exhausting, and trying to manage, say, a really difficult case, and also having a, you know, an extra person there who wants to ask you every single question under the sun can be difficult. So that was a really good perspective change as well.
I remember on a case I had a student observer, and we actually had a gun pulled on us on this scene. And I remember the first thing I thought of was that I didn't want that observer to get injured. And that wasn't I didn't think that that would be my go-to thought, but I then became more worried about that person than actually, you know, trying to problem solve the situation, I guess, which was, this was about 8 years ago now, but it just really does add this extra element to your thought process. So I think we do need to also appreciate that it is a lot for people to be supervising and making sure they don't get hurt or assaulted, or, you know, it's another person to be responsible for.
I think if you can, and you should be able to do this, is turn a negative into a positive. So a lot of the jaded crews, you know, the vehicle check for them is poorly done or not done. So if I was working with a crew who were not interested, I would say, hey guys, I'm really interested in knowing the truck well. Would you mind if you watch me do the vehicle check, or just watch me do it? And after a while, you'll probably start doing it autonomously. And that way you'd be really all over the gear where it is, and take a load off that crew. And they might go, hey, this guy's, you know, pretty keen and wants to know the equipment, and it's actually making our day a bit easier. And then you might get some buy-in from them later on. Again, it would be pretty difficult if you showed genuine interest and didn't overload them with questions, but showed an interest in gaining from their experience. They might not have the knowledge, and we have to admit that some of the paramedics in the service, their knowledge, especially if they haven't studied for a while, might not be as current as the students, and that might be an intimidation factor. So phrase questions with regard to their experience and allow them to demonstrate their knowledge, but don't always ask them about knowledge if you think that they maybe aren't as current as you may be. But try whenever you can to observe and think how you would act in 10 to 20 years time if someone came along who maybe had equal or more knowledge than you but lacked experience. Try and put yourself in their shoes and take the burden and monotony out of their day a bit.
That's a really good insight. Thank you. And Colin?
Yeah, look, no matter what profession you're in, whether it's paramedicine, whether it's nursing, whether it's a doctor, physiotherapist, I don't know, even a local mechanic, you will always find, for want of a better word, a bad apple. Someone that's had a bad experience, has what you would describe as a really bad or lousy attitude. And that could be that they inherited that from someone that trained them many, many years ago. So my advice to students is that just like Gary said and like Amy said, just be proactive, fit in. As far as I'm concerned, there's no such thing as a stupid question. I've been around 35 years. I'm still learning. Hopefully I won't be around for another 35. You never stop learning. There's no such thing as a stupid question. And the other thing I tell students is that go there with an open mind, go there like a sponge, suck as much information and as much environmental awareness, just look at everything, learn it, take it in. And our students are very well educated. They're very, very smart. You, with your own training and your own personal beliefs and upbringing, etc., you'll soon weed out what's the rubbish and what's not. And remember, if you are out there and you don't think that you're getting, you don't think you're getting the buy-in or the support or whatever, don't be afraid to speak up, okay? If you think that you and your mentor aren't, it's not working or you're not getting what you need, feel free to speak up. It's not this, you know, you'll be hit with a big stick type thing. It is important that you as a student, you get the education and the relevance that you need to then eventually complete your studentship, become a really good paramedic, and then in turn, one day, you'll end up mentoring someone. So, yeah, I suppose take it all in. Take on board what you need to take on board. You'll soon be able to weed out the stuff that comes across as a negative. Dismiss that, but, yeah, don't be afraid to speak up.
I think what Cole just said just reminded me of my own student journey as well. I remember there was a qualified who was quite nasty to me on my placements, and I just never could click with this person. And then very recently when I was doing a management role, I was technically their boss. And I remember looking at this person now from a completely different perspective where I was actually their manager and knowing a lot more about them now and their insecurities and their history. It just made me realise that there is two sides to how people behave, I guess. And now I actually get along with this person quite well. But I think it was just a big eye-opener to me about how their behaviour previously probably actually came from a place where they'd had a student. Now I know had a student who lied to them on a case. It ended up with quite a significant clinical error occurring, and which they got roped into. So they had this stress and anxiety about having students from then on. So yeah, it just reminded me of, you never know where you're going to be in the future as well, and what position you'll be in.
Absolutely. I think that ties in nicely to your feedback comment before about, you know, not taking it personally as well. So don't take it personally if your mentors, you know, you really don't, you know, get along with your mentor or anything. Try not to take their negativity personally or anything.
Yeah, you just never know who they've had before you as well. It can be really difficult for some people to, if they already have their own anxieties and now they've got a student and they've been burnt before with a student, that would naturally make anyone stressful. That's, you know, can induce a lot of extra anxiety to the job if they feel like they can't trust someone they're with. It's a big thing for us, is that camaraderie at work. So exactly what you said, Alex, it's not always personal, and try and actually give people the benefit of the doubt to find out why they're behaving like that.
Absolutely. And I think we'll finish off on Serge as well regarding that question.
I think everyone's pretty much hit the nail on the head. One thing I can sort of, or that I want to emphasize on, is students have rights as well, and students have a voice. If you're not feeling comfortable, speak up. If you're not being treated right, speak up. And just because you're not learning something clinically, like Amy said in the beginning, like, learn the behavior that you want to mold forward, learn the behavior that you don't want to project on a scene. That's pretty much it.
And if there's something you're worried about, go to the ORC of the station or contact your university supervisors and see if there is something that they can do in that time. Don't be afraid to do that. I mean, if you come back and go, I asked them a question about how to tell the difference between axis deviations and they didn't know, I want to change my mentor, that's probably not appropriate. But if you say, you know, I show up to shift and they go inside and make me check the whole truck, and I'm just a bit nervous that I don't know what I'm doing, or you know, they exclude me from conversations, or there's lots of things that everyone can gather what is more than inappropriate behavior. And on a serious note, if anyone is ever being inappropriate to you personally in any sort of sexual manner either, that is something you need to come forward with and get some support for that sort of behavior. I'm not saying that occurs, but that's a thing that should happen at all. But I have no doubt it does happen. And I think if there's ever a situation like that, speaking to your university supervisors or an officer in charge is definitely somewhere that you could start.
Absolutely. That's a really important point. And just to finish off as well, so, you know, even one of the things that a few of our guests have said in the past has been, if you're looking for that positive environment to surround yourself in and you can't find particular mentors during uni or anything like that, engaging yourself in CPD events, books around the paramedic profession, positive things like that that are external, are really important. Now, you guys are going to be doing a lot more CPD with PEA and all of your sort of student and paramedic education. Where can our listeners go and find you guys?
So we can be found on Facebook under Paramedic Education Australia, which is the old Team Australia EMS page. So if people followed that page previously. There's also a Twitter page for Paramedic Education Australia, or we can be emailed at paraedoz@gmail.com. I think quite excitingly, we are actually planning a student-specific conference for the middle of the year, which we haven't officially announced. So that's, I guess, our official announcement.
No, I think you're the first person out of the group to hear it. So.
So we're planning that for the middle of the year for the uni break. And we're also planning on doing some student-based CPD events, which may also include some smaller group sessions so that we can actually, you know, do more one-on-one type CPD with students to figure out a bit more nitty-gritty what needs to be done and have it more student-based. I think Gary's got a lot of big ideas for that arena as well. So it's some exciting times ahead.
That sounds really exciting, actually. Sounds like a lot of great ideas.
Yeah, and we want to base a lot of what we do for students off what students want. So if there's ever any idea or any gap that people feel that there needs to be more stuff, and Alex, I think what you're doing for students right now with these podcasts is extremely impressive, because you found that there was a need and a gap in this sort of thing, and I think it's great to show the initiative to start something like this. So we really encourage people to do exactly what you've done and try and get involved with their own education and contact us if there's something specific that they want, because we're really, really lucky to have a lot of good contacts, and we'd just like to help people get in touch with the right avenues, I guess. So, yeah, feel free to reach out, anyone. We're more than happy to hear people's thoughts and ideas going forward.
Well, thank you guys so much for taking the time out of your days to come and have a chat. You know, I learned a lot, and I'm sure that everyone listening to this will too. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. You can connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or you can email us at studentparamedicpodcast@gmail.com.